Conrad's pecs are massive, dude.
Is there fan art?
Deviant art, dude.
DM me the fan art.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan here.
And this is episode 213, our final episode of the year.
We made it through 2019, guys.
Barely.
We made it through an entire decade of New Game Plus.
Wow. Yeah, we did. We started in this last decade.
We did. So we are a decade spanning. That's our new tagline. A decade spanning podcast.
We're three guys span 3 decades.
One old decade.
And now that we are concluding 1 decade and moving into the next, I looked through a couple of lists of best video games of the decade.
Ooh.
And I wanted to share with you a few of the games that I saw consistently on these lists. And then I want to ask from you, are there any that you would add? Mm-hmm. And then out of the ones that we mentioned, which one would you make a case for? Grand Theft Auto V was on many of the lists, of course. Breath of the Wild. Okay. Fortnite had to be.
It didn't.
Dark Souls. It did.
No, it didn't.
Dark Souls.
One?
Yes. Pokemon Go.
Yeah, okay.
League of Legends, which Kenny's going to be semantical on this one. It did come out October 2009.
Yeah, I'm going to call that this decade.
Okay, good.
Okay, good.
I'm reasonable.
Skyrim. Mm-hmm. Portal 2.
I didn't realize that was this decade.
Yeah.
It's pretty wow. Weird. I thought that was older.
The Witcher 3, Wild mm-hmm. Hunt. Mm-hmm. And the only one that I made an executive decision on not including, and maybe we can, is your baby, Nolan, Minecraft.
Why not?
Because it came out May 2009.
Alpha, right?
Like, yeah, it was indie. It was
an alpha.
People didn't know about it, of course.
Yeah.
If we're giving it to League of Legends, you got to give it to Minecraft.
Okay, then I feel like that's the answer then. People are still playing that in droves. But we'll put Minecraft on there. Those are some. Are there any that you think need to be added to a list of best games of the decade?
I had games I was thinking about suggesting, and then when you read that list, I went, oh, these aren't anywhere near as good as any of those games. Like, those are...
Yeah, that's a good list.
Those will be games that are known, like, forever. Like,
those are strong titles. The one that I wasn't for sure about until I read an entire article on it was Dark Souls, just because I'm not steep into that world. But there is one publication that put that as the number one game of the decade because... Wow. Of what it did for gaming.
Yeah, I totally see why that's on the list. It needed to be. It's not like genre defining or anything, but it's kind of subgenre defining, and it's a very like, I don't know. It's kind of goes back to that single player thing in a world of MMOs and multiplayer. It was just like, no, this is a really hard single player game and you're going to like it.
Out of the ones that we've listed, which one would you make a case for being the best game of the decade?
Oh. Okay. Kenny, do you have an answer?
No,
I doubt you do.
I've got a few that I'm struggling with.
The
best game or the most memorable? What's our actual metric,
Kenny,
here?
This the best. What would you say is the best game of the decade?
Okay. Yeah, then I've got an answer there.
Okay, go. You go first for once.
Breath of the Wild.
Oh, please tell me more.
He hasn't played it.
I know, but I want to hear this.
But I'm very familiar with it. I've watched lots of play.
Yeah.
And it's just an excellent game.
Yeah.
I'll help you. It is on the newer console, right? So that helps, I guess, Switch. Mm-hmm. But it is Zelda, which that helps, of course.
Help.
it's the first open world Zelda?
People would be like, no, technically the first one's open world, but let's be real. Yes, it's the first open world Zelda.
The first one, like Zelda 1?
Zelda 1, yeah. Because you can go with, you can go to the end of the game without beating anything else. That's where they got the inspiration for being open world.
Yeah, and Ocarina and stuff like that, whatever. But yeah, so I get that. And the graphics, the music, I've heard story and gameplay are great as well. So I could see that for sure. Nolan?
That's actually not my answer.
Yeah.
But I love that Kenny chose it, and I agree. But I'm going to say Minecraft. It's kind of predictable for me. I almost said League, but I'm saying Minecraft because, like you said, it's still being played. So for an entire decade, 10 years, it never dwindled in popularity or support. It changed hands from Notch and Jagex to Microsoft purchasing it, which is a huge deal. So that is also telling. But it's such a fantastic game that I don't even think is going anywhere. I think it's going to stay for a little longer at least. And it's used in education, for coding. It's got a huge modding community. It's such a, it's like, for me, that is the decade. It's Minecraft.
Yeah, you could make arguments for any of these, which is why it's such a good list.
Yeah, but it's also like it's counterintuitive. Like it's pixel crappy graphics. It's three, right. It's right. 3D, but it's like not groundbreaking, and it's that's what it was meaning to do.
Man, it's hard for me because, again, there's all these games you can make a case for. Like Pokemon Go obviously did something, although it hasn't been followed up like I thought that it would. I know some people have tried and they've done some additional things, but and then League of Legends, I'm so tempted to say that.
Just say it. I know that I'm you wanted too. To.
And you said Skyrim as well, right? Like that's
right.
Easily
and
arguable.
So that's my answer. It is Skyrim. And okay. I think that's somewhat vanilla and somewhat base. But
no.
I mean, people are still, for good or bad in my opinion, people are still basing their games today off of Skyrim. It's so funny when they're like, oh, it's like Skyrim. But like, when
bigger.
Skyrim came out a decade ago, like let's make games that are like something new or different nowadays. But I mean, Skyrim, reasonably so, it is an incredible, incredible masterpiece of a game. It's a game that every couple of years I'll load back up, I'll put on the mods, and I'll have a beautiful, incredible, engaging experience. And I can still have experiences today in game that I haven't had in the dozens of other playthroughs before.
Yeah. And League just straight up defined esports for the decade. Right. Like, so
that one might be it, man, because
esports, it really might,
has become its own thing.
It's on ESPN, like freaking ESPN.
Right, right. Well, as we enter a new decade, let's do our best to remember these great games of the 2010s, lest we become amnesiacs like Conrad B. Hart and forget the games that truly made this decade great.
Conrad B. Forgetten.
Like in our retro game of the week flashback
overview.
Flashback, originally released as Flashback: The Quest for Identity, is a 1992 science fiction cinematic platform game.
Huh?
Yeah, which you can't just like meld everything together and call that a day.
No.
After playing the first stage, I was like, this is just a platformer. Like, it's got cutscenes. Wow, it's a platformer.
Yeah.
But then the second stage is less, I mean, you're still platforming, but you're kind of more so just doing menial story elements. I don't know. It's a really weird mixture of things, but it also includes cinematic cutscenes, I guess. It was developed by a French company named Delphine Software. And it originally came out for the Amiga, although it was created for the Mega Drive, for the Genesis, which it did come out on, as well as the Super Nintendo and then various other ports. It was advertised originally as a CD-ROM game on a cartridge, but then it kind of came out with a CD-ROM version as well. So it was a CD-ROM game on a
CD-ROM game.
Yeah.
All right.
It follows the real life, I'm doing air quotes right now, the real life character model and movement that was either popularized or created by Prince of Persia. Which one is it? Created,
yeah,
I think.
So Created, the guy's name is Jordan Mechner, and I read a lot about him this week. He was responsible for Prince of Persia, a game called Karateka, or Karateka. It's like a fighting game.
Kudelka?
No. Okay. And it's called Rotoscope Technique, where it's like modeling realistic movements in real life. Mortal Kombat used it a little bit too. But yeah, he created it.
Mortal Kombat was a little bit more advanced. I believe in these earlier versions, they record a person and then they, through transparencies,
yes,
they trace the different movements of an actual person so yep. that you get kind of this, again, quote unquote, real life model and movement.
Yes.
We played Prince of Persia earlier in this podcast at
Very
some
early,
point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is, if you haven't played one of these real life rotoscoping, whatever it is, games, it is different. it's not a little Mario that's running around that you have full control of. It's this it's this person that is long and lanky and yeah. limber and human-like and can easily die. And that's who you are in this. You are Conrad B. Hart, and you lost your memory. You amnesia. Something bad happened. I think you were in a spaceship wreck. Accident?
Space crash, yeah.
Space crash. And luckily, you left yourself a message in holocube form telling yourself to go find Ian in New Washington, which just kind of sets up a series of events and reveals as you go through this dramatic science fiction universe and story.
Yeah. So you're like a FBI agent, right? Or like the future's version of a agent.
I don't know. At first you wake up and you don't know really who you are because, again,
True.
Amnesia. And yeah. so I think there's some discoveries right after the first stage where you learn a little bit more about who you are and what are the bad things that happen to you, yeah. et cetera.
So what's really, really crazy to me about this game and all of the like rotoscope technique games is how under the radar they were for, I mean, I wasn't alive when, well, I was alive when this came out, but I wasn't alive when the others came out. So I can't really say that, but like, and obviously we'll talk about this more in aged, but like, it's from what I understand was super groundbreaking in video games. And then I can't name other games ever that used it.
Well, you did name Mortal Kombat. So that is one. There's not tons.
It, like you said, it was more advanced though. Like,
and, right.
And part of it here isn't just the rotoscoping, though that's certainly like a big factor in these games. Part of it is sort of their whole underlying approach about trying to create a realistic game.
Yeah.
It's more philosophy here that's broader than just the way they captured the main character, I think.
That's
in terms
true.
Of, you know, calling it a cinematic platformer. Like, they really were going for a, I think, unique to the time, possibly to now, still gaming experience. And yes, these, like, same techniques never really caught on in any mainstream way, but I still think that there's lots of people who take similar inspiration in trying to do something new and artistic and tell a story in a realistic, like immersive kind of way, which is, I think, what they were shooting for.
Yeah.
That's definitely what they were shooting for. Whether or not they accomplished it, we'll find out. And I think it's good for us to save kind of what the game is like, or even how it's set up for this next section, because it is, in my opinion, entirely unique in the way that they approach it.
Gameplay.
Okay, so we talked about the cinematic and the sci-fi aspects of that strange genre category that they want to put themselves in. But platformer is also in there, and we know what platformers are, so let's talk about how this is a platformer, or at least the parts of it that are. You're controlling Conrad, and you're thrown into a very familiar-looking platform-style game. So there's ledges, and there are gaps to jump, and there are enemies. And so you have very basic controls to navigate the stage. And we all played Genesis. This was on Amiga and other things, but there are three buttons on a Genesis controller. So you've got your action button, the very simple, you can run with it. You have a draw gun button, and you have...
What does that do?
Well, you pull out a piece of paper and a pen, and you draw
a gun. And you start
gun.
Drawing a weapon?
Yeah. And then you have a shoot button, which is very foreign to me. I wish you could just press a shoot button and pull out a gun and start shooting, and, you know, most games do that. But those are the controls that you have. But very similar to Prince of Persia, it's a slow-paced platformer. It is not... It's not Mario, it's not Sonic, it's very slow. Like, you feel limited to what a human could do in this situation. So if that's what they're trying to do, they did a good job.
Yeah, and while there are platforms, it's not like this game is set up like most platformers where the platforming is the game. In this, it felt like the platformers were there to be able to create a world and tell a story.
Yeah.
I felt, because like in the first world, you are moving through platforms. It's a little bit more platform centric, but in the second and kind of future iterations of the stages, there are platforms. You're always having to jump up or climb or go through these different platforms, but it's just to get to new areas and fight new enemies. And so platforming in my mind wasn't like the central focus here.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that platforming took the back burner. It was a medium through which they could tell this story of a game that they had in mind.
I'd agree. Like, that's the most common way to navigate a space in a game and, you know, a view that was easy to do. And
right.
So you do it. I don't think they wanted to specifically, like, be a platformer. It just happens to be... the fact that it was a platformer did lend itself to some of the puzzle elements that the game has, because there is a fairly heavy emphasis on figuring out how to get to where you're going or how to accomplish your next goal. And a lot of that is sort of this exploration, puzzle-y kind of stuff where you know what you want, but something may be behind a locked door where you have to find a key for it, which you have to move a couple of screens through and do some platforming and pay attention to details and fight some enemies to get there. And so they really do use it as a tool to kind of allow you to do these other things.
Right, which is both – that's great. Like, use that to tell the greater story and to do the cinematic things that you want to do. But the downside is – the player's got a platform and you're confined to these rules and physics that they set up. And again, I'm going to bring it up again because it's very obvious. It's slow paced. It's very slow paced and at times felt restrictive. Like, I don't know. I want to be able to run and jump a gap and feel like smooth, if that makes sense. Smoothness. Like, but here I don't jump very far, and when I land, I basically break my legs. He's like,
sure,
the
sure.
recovery is, yeah.
Yeah, because it's, again, quote-unquote real life. So
Conrad,
it's hard. I did a first play this week, and it's not great. It's the majority of it is me figuring out how to control this character because it's super foreign.
Yes.
And it is slow. And so if you haven't played this game before, it's going to take you, a good amount of time to feel familiar with this game. Like, this week, did you guys ever get to the point where you felt like, man, you have the movement and you were able to control Conrad the way that you wanted him to 90% of the time?
Definitely
no, never
not.
Fully.
Yeah, never fully for me either, or never even 90%. You know, I was giving us a little bit of grace room. I always felt a little clunky because there's like, I don't know, someone in Discord shared the manual this week, and there's four or five different jumps and different ways to do the jumps. And sometimes you can kind of auto jump if you're running and there's a ledge in a certain space, which is nice. But then sometimes you've got to tap one button, like do forward on the D-pad, then tap up, tap A or something. Just a weird combination of things.
Yep.
And that's just to jump. And jumping is a big portion of it, but even climbing up ledges or letting yourself down from ledges so you don't break your legs. There's so many different... button combinations and weird things that you might have to do to make the game work for you.
Yeah, and it's pretty exacting. It also makes me roll my eyes a little bit that they're going for realism in that, like, hey, you could climb up this thing that you wouldn't be able to jump up. But the truth is, if it was real life and I had to pull myself up that many ledges with just my upper body strength, I'd die on level one and the aliens would win.
But hey, there's not aliens. Spoiler. Conrad's pecs are massive, dude.
Is there fan art? I guess he's buff and his legs are weak.
DM me the fan art.
Being sci-fi, you do have enemies that are shapeshifters and aliens and robots and like cyber police. And so there are somewhat of a variety of enemies, somewhat. But again, all of that is just littered throughout stages, sometimes with little explanation of why you're murdering everything and everyone and why everyone's coming to try to get you. So there's tons of opportunities for death. There's a lot of opportunities for instant death. We've already mentioned, but if you fall any distance over medium, then you are going to, then you're going to die.
Yeah. And that's that. So don't make that mistake again.
Yeah. And that's just one of the examples. Many opportunities to die instantly. There are save points throughout the stages, but it's not even a hard save. So like if you turned off your console, it's not there anymore. But they do give you a password at each new stage. But these stages are super long, so they're, you could lose a lot of progress.
Yeah, they're very long. Like that's another thing that's in the booklet, I want to say. Like there's like a map of each stage in the levels, and they're very big, especially considering you're not going through them very quickly. It's just like, it's kind of punishing if you aren't able to sit down for a long period of time to get through one stage. I don't know what to tell you, because like you're just gonna have to do it again the next time you start up the game. And that's good and bad. Like, I appreciate that they put time and effort into making each stage or area, let's just say area, because that's what it felt like, feel vast and unique and had its own unique design, which was cool. It's just, it's too sprawling. It was maze-like at times. You have to talk to a lot of people and interact with a lot of things. And that's another thing I wanted to bring up in gameplay. Like, you're doing some combat, but not a ton. What you're doing a lot of the time is looking for an item, like a key card or something on the ground, and they're not easy to see visually. Luckily, like if you walk over it, it'll give you like a name in the top left, like fuse or something. But if you don't see it, you're going to be looking for these items for a long time. And that's where the puzzling gets really frustrating for me.
So we talked about the fact that there's these quote unquote realistic movements, but I think we ought to go through a couple of them because, yes, you're pulling yourself up ledges. Yes, you're doing some jumping over gaps or over bombs. You're pulling your gun in and out. But they give you a few more things that you can do as well that end up being really, really essential. I think especially later in the game as, like, more enemies start coming at you again and again and again.
Like what? Like force fields and stuff like that? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and so you've got this mechanic where you have this force field.
Nice.
Which is super helpful if you can master it. And what it does is it basically drops a force field in front of you that will, like, catch a projectile. So, like, if somebody's shooting at you, you can stop one of their bullets by dropping this force field in front of you, which obviously is super helpful. You've also got this roll maneuver you can do, kind of like every good, I don't know, person with a gun that's an action hero, where if you're crouched and have your gun, you can, like, move forward rapidly in a roll.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah.
It felt very Miami Vice.
It did, like, totally.
Hold it right there.
And the crouch mechanic actually ends up becoming really important too, because they play a lot with height in terms of enemies and what can hit you and what can't at different levels. And so there was a lot to learn going on. And again, it took a little while to really get those button combinations. And even beyond that, you had things like rocks you could pick up and distract enemies with.
Yeah. You had a shield that is rechargeable. So that's actually your health, I think, for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so you only can take a certain amount of hits, but there's recharge stations littered throughout the stages, so you can recharge your shield. Pretty cool.
Yeah, and so there was definitely some depth there in terms of having some options gameplay wise. It wasn't just run around and, you know, explore things and that's it.
One of the things that I think makes this game unique, I don't know if it's a good unique, but is the variety of what you're doing. Or like, it's just weird. The first stage, as I've already mentioned, is set up kind of more of like a platformer and you're just trying to get to the end. But the second stage is a town or a city or a village. Yeah. It kind of feels like it's underground. I don't know if it fully is, but and for a long time you have to do odd jobs in the city. Like you have to be a courier or you have to move someone from one place to another to make money to be able to get an ID or a forger or like to just to forward the plot. And then you have a gauntlet where you're fighting increasingly difficult rooms and battles to get to the top of the it's just you're doing different things. It's all a platformer. Like the look and the feel doesn't necessarily change, but what they're asking you to do changes drastically depending on the stage and the part of the story that you're at.
It does. You had like this survival horror game element. You had like RPG elements with these weird kind of petty side quests for money. Although I will say it totally bothered me. I know this is a silly thing to get caught up on, but it totally bothered me that you could never afford to get off of this. You could never afford to like fly to Earth because there's unless you win this game that gives you like 10,000 credits. And then in like 10 minutes of gameplay of just doing real person work, you make like 1500 credits. Like you easily could have like spent, I don't know, a week working and bailed this planet without putting your life in peril for everybody's entertainment. And the math there was really off and it bothered me.
Aged. One of the things that I enjoyed was the variety of environments. I thought they were detailed and artistically done. It's 92, so we're not looking for anything extraordinary, but your first stage is a lush forest that seems to have overgrown some kind of science fiction tech of sorts. Like you've got a weird mixture there, which helps, you know, leave you, the player, with questions as to what actually is going on.
Yep.
But then the next stage or next area, I like that you called it that, Nolan, is the city of New Washington, and it's bleak. And
like cyberpunk, like the cyberpunk. Subway looked really nice. Yeah.
Very cyberpunk. And every level has like two or three different backgrounds, you know, like depth. It's showing depth. And so so I thought that was one of the things that was done well. And even today, looking back on it, like it ages pretty well. I think that's one of the few things, in my opinion, that aged well in this game.
Yeah, I think that goes back to the whole cinematic thing they were going for. Like their focus was on making you feel like you were almost watching a movie or part of this grand story. And the backdrops, from what I understand, the Genesis version looks the best. They're very similar across versions, but I think the color of the Genesis just ends up making the environments look amazing. And I think they did a great job, just so much detail that usually isn't found in console games. Like it felt like a PC game at times to me because of that. And I guess you could argue that it is.
I 100% felt like it was a PC game enough so that I wished I was playing it on a computer. I feel like, I don't know, mouse and keyboard interaction would have helped to do all the movements in more natural ways for me. And so it really did not feel console-y to me at all.
The cinematic thing, I want to talk about that. Like, we didn't mention it too much, but when you're playing this game, you're interrupted a lot by cutscenes or mini cutscenes. Your screen changes. Okay, so like you look at a computer screen to accept one of those jobs that we were talking about. It puts you into perspective of what you're seeing on the screen. You find an item on the ground. You see a cinematic play of Conrad picking it up off the ground. Like, that's it. And then it goes back to gameplay. So you're constantly being interrupted by these quote-unquote cinematics. And they're not impressive, but when you think about the platform that they're on, they're pretty impressive. Like, but I don't know. I'm saying all this. I don't know how well that works, though. When you look at it today, it feels disruptive more so than immersive, at least for me. I don't know how you guys felt.
But they're not long, you know?
No,
and one
not.
Of the things that they did get right is that I'm pretty confident that you can skip each and every single one of them, meaning that when they come up, you can press start or whatever and you can go right past it.
I did not know that.
Which a lot of games can't even get that right today. You know? Like even some of my favorite Final Fantasies, I don't think that you can skip some of the cutscenes. So I thought that that was nice. I agree with you. I thought they were great, especially for the time. Do they age today? Of course. But if you don't like them, and I think you can skip them. I thought it was one of the
I didn't know you could skip them. I would have been doing that, definitely. But on that same note, I kind of wished that they explored the cinematics a little more with story elements. You got some major ones, like in between stages or towards the end of an area, but I think there was more potential for like story cinematics rather than just like cinematics for the sake of like immersion.
I heavily agree with that fact that there were a couple of really cool short cinematic kind of story elements, but this is one of those games that, like, if you read the plot summary, you go like, they were trying to go for a really cool
movie
style, like, cinematic story experience, and it sounds super cool. And then you see the implementation of it in the game, and you get one line of dialogue from an NPC that kind of implies something, and you have to infer this whole sort of story element from that, or you get one really short cutscene that just gives kind of like two or three line snippets of what's going on. And so the story, I think has a lot going for it as a cool sci-fi story, but they don't get to actually tell it in as much depth as I think it needs for the kind of game that it's trying to be.
Totally agree with that. A lot of, like, this could be a good little book, or it could even be a good TV show in the late 80s, early 90s.
Sure.
But they aren't able to explore it fully. You're completely right on that. Musically, I'm super interested to hear what you guys think. I thought that it was too silent for too much of the game. And while the few musical bits that did come in, I thought they were okay, but the sound effects were pretty lackluster. Again, my thoughts.
It worked for me for the kind of game it was trying to be. I thought not having constant music and just sort of having music at really intentional parts was a good approach. I don't think they always nailed it on like when to bring music in. Like, you'd think something really cool was happening and it was just like another random enemy that was meaningless. So like, they could have implemented that better, but I like the just background sound effects, kind of quiet. I thought that helped me kind of immerse in the realistic feeling of the game. And so I'm glad they went lighthanded on it. And the music they did have, I thought was pretty good. And so I don't have too many complaints. I'll agree sound effects weren't like the strong suit, but I thought that at least what they tried to do with music was a good call.
I agree. This is one of the rare cases where I think silence adds more to the game and to the experience. Like, think of the plot. Think of where we are. Like, it's not a lively, exciting place. Music, like a sound, a song for the area would have felt kind of strange. Like, that's more of a traditional platforming decision. And I think they did this on purpose. And for me, it did work. And the tracks were cool. Like, again, I think the Genesis did the sound better than the other two. So you're complaining about the sound effects. I think they were worse on Amiga. Like, so I don't know. It worked for me. It worked for me.
The game was released on Switch just this last year, which I think is just the original version with remastered music.
I'd be curious to play it just to see how the controls work. Because
it's the same.
It's exactly the same?
Yes. So what I actually looked into it, it's better music, and they've got like some filters to like graphically to modernize it, but you can turn them off and you can go back to 8-bit music if you want. The controls are the same, and the booklet that comes with it is just a scan of the original. They didn't even try to update it, and it doesn't fit in the box. The booklet's too big. It's the worst publication ever.
They ship it separately or what?
No, it's shipped as one. But the booklet is outside of the box, and there's like this tin. It's shaped like a SNES cartridge.
So weird.
The game doesn't fit inside. It's like loose. It's so bad.
Well, I honestly think that you can purchase the Genesis or maybe even Super Nintendo game for cheaper than you can get the Switch version. So it's relatively easy to pick up and play whichever direction you intend to go.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Who would like to go first?
I'll go first. I have thoughts. Okay. I'm very interested in this Jordan Mechner guy that did Prince of Persia and that fighting game and kind of like was the father of Rotoscope at the time or whatever, because he was very into film and wanted to see the two mediums come together and so like screen transitions, he used influence from the way that the movies he liked did screen transitions with the like sliding effect. Star Wars later did that too. I just wish there are more games now that merge the two mediums, but we do. It's just better graphics and better cinematics and cutscenes. So I can respect this game for being one of the early adopters of incorporating scenes and acting, almost you could say, and movie-like qualities into a game. I just do not think it holds up enough to for me to recommend someone slog through it, if that makes sense. So it hurts me almost to not give this New Game Plus because of the respect that I have for what it was reaching for and what it succeeded in at the time. I really do think the age destroys it for me. So I can't give a New Game Plus.
That's one no. Flashback was a commercial and critical success and was listed in the Guinness World Records as the best-selling French game of all time. I'm okay. Not entirely sure why. I do agree a lot that I think that a lot of the intention here is good and admirable. In 92 could have been some fun, although I would have picked some other games. This would have been a rental that I wouldn't have purchased myself. And I think for sure age just kind of degrades the experience drastically, in my opinion. So I most certainly, although I had some fun and was intrigued a little bit by the story, do not give Flashback my vote for New Game Plus status.
Uh-oh. Are people going to hate us? Is this one of those games?
No,
are you
I don't
sure?
think so. I think okay. Everyone has to understand that this is a pretty
sure.
high okay. hill to climb. I found myself 100% in Nolan's camp this week. That's rare. Did find there were a lot of really respectable things about this game, and I wanted to like it. I loved what they were trying to do. I love some of how they went about doing it. But then you said slog, and it was. It was a slog to learn how to do the controls. It was a slog in pace, just for like actual pace as well as pace of story. They could have just cut content like in half and still let you do sort of the same things and get through the experience. And it would have felt almost as good. They could have halved the life of all of the enemies that you were fighting the same enemy over mm-hmm. and over and over again and having to shoot each one 14 times. And it was just slow. They could have really tightened it up and made it a fun game experience. But they leaned so heavy into this immersion and they didn't quite hit it in how to do it in game-friendly ways, not just cinematic platform-friendly ways. And so lots of respect for this game, but it doesn't age well. And so fully agreed, no New Game Plus for me.
Which means that Flashback, the quest for identity, is not New Game Plus certified.
Get wrecked.
But what do you think? Are you going to agree with us, or like Nolan fears, are you going to think that we're idiots? We had a lot of people write in. Greg said, with its realistic physics and animated cutscenes, Flashback is nothing like anything released in 1992. The game boasts a gorgeous sci-fi art style in a similar vein to Another World. After spending a few hours with the Genesis port, I'm saddened to say that this simply isn't fun to play today. The fluid movement of your character may be impressive on a technical scale, but it makes platforming a chore, as you have to be pixel perfect with your jumps. I spent an embarrassing amount of time trying to get a hang of the running jump mechanic. I can't recommend it outside of sheer curiosity.
That's so true. If you're going to do a platformer, I don't care what other things you're trying to do. If it's not fluid, if it's not a platformer, it's a huge negative.
Right. It's hard. If you create a platformer, if you're creating a platformer, platforming has to be the best part of the game, in my opinion.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Like, here's what they could have done here. Just made it an action story, cinematic, sci-fi game.
And point I think and that click. I'll do you one better.
That would have solved a lot of the problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. But
when you try to make it a platformer and then you make it a bad platformer.
Bad platformer.
I mean, that definitely comes into play. Astral Soul said, this might be one of the hardest games I've ever played to draw a decisive opinion about. When I first played it several years back, I found the game to be a chore to play. The controls are incredibly clunky, and I was always at a loss of where to go next. However, I can say the music, although sparse, it's pretty good, and the animations are excellent. What little I gathered of the story seemed interesting as well. All in all, I feel like you're better off watching somebody play the game who knows what they're doing than to actually play it yourself.
Hmm. Yeah, I fully agree with that sentiment.
It
lets you get some of the good things about the game without having to slog through some of the sloggier parts of the game, which is a great word to say. And that's how I would recommend to people, if they're intrigued by this title, go about it, is just watch it. Don't even play it.
Garlisle said, it's so extremely hard not to compare this game to Delphine Software's previous major work, Out of This World. Both have heavy roots in Prince of Persia, but while Out of This World pushed in new directions and embraced cinematic storytelling in a landmark way, Flashback disregards everything they learned. It mostly wants to be an action game, but the gameplay is horridly clunky. Yeah, its gunplay miserable, and that it was praised for this on release is almost funny. If you're going to play something in this inherently frustrating genre, at least pick something rewarding. Out of This World, Odd World, Limbo, Inside, you can do much better than this, whether you're looking for something retro or modern.
Hire the man. Well said. I have nothing to add to that.
We agree with all of those. We also had a few others write in. Glenn, Visceration, Bro Jim, and Sten87 for the first time. Glenn said, I'd recommend most people try it, but only a few people will actually enjoy it. Bro Jim said it commits one unforgivable sin, being boring. He gave it 4.5 yawns. And then Sten87 said it took him 20 minutes to figure out the long jump, and that was his second attempt at the game. So he said, maybe it's not the type of game for me, or maybe it just sucks.
Wow. Okay. I feel validated. I was very concerned because it feels like one of those cult classics, you know?
Right.
And I guess it is, but okay, cool.
Yeah, this is one that the more I played it, the less I liked it.
Yeah.
Which is not super common. And,
that's,
you know,
not, normally it's not the best development.
No,
tactics.
It's not a good sign. But like, there was this initial, okay, this game's going to be difficult, let me learn the mechanics. It was frustrating.
Yeah.
Then you get over that and you get some story and it's intriguing and you start to like get a little immersed and you're doing better and you're moving around and kind of getting it. And then it's just that over and over and over again in no new or novel ways. And it's repetitious. And I think he's right. Boring. And so it really got worse for me the more I played it, which is usually a sign that it's not going to get in GP for me.
Thank you for writing in and sending us your thoughts on the Retro Game of the Week. You, listener, can do that at any time. We'd love to include your thoughts as a part of our upcoming episodes. Send us an email to ngppodcast@gmail.com or come into our Discord to the commentary channel and leave your comments there. But for now, we're going to put aside Flashback and we're going to select the game that we're going to be playing first in a brand new decade.
That's very exciting to me. Very hype.
Again, we said this last year, but it will dictate how bad or good this year is going to be.
Oh, is this going to be our groundhog moment for the entire year?
I don't know what that means, but yes.
Did we have a really terrible game start 2019?
Hey.
I don't remember.
That's rude.
What was it?
I don't know.
It was probably a game.
It was a game, and this one will be too. Okay. Randomizing now. All right, boys, we are starting the year 2020 with an odd game. It, too, is a platform video game, this time an actual platform video game. It was published by GT Interactive in 1997 for the PlayStation. It was the first in its series and is widely acclaimed for having innovative gameplay, good art direction, and engaging cutscenes.
What?
However, it has a steep learning curve. So
Flashback 2?
We're playing Flashback again.
We are going to be playing for the first time on this podcast in a new year, Oddworld: Abe's Odyssey.
All right. 2020 is going to be the worst decade ever.
No. This is probably going to be a good game.
Why?
Was this literally one of the ones
I hated the description.
Garlisle recommended that we play instead of Flashback?
Oh, was it? Let me see.
No way.
He said out of this world, Oddworld, Limbo. Whoa.
Wait, no. Out of this world?
He said out of this world, he suggested Oddworld, Limbo, and Inside, and Oddworld is the one that we picked. Or that we randomized.
Okay. Because out of this world is the same developer.
Play the lottery. Like, he's beaten some odds.
Man. Well, all right.
Beating some odds. Find a copy of Abe's Odyssey and play it along with us in 2020.
If you want to be a part of our Discord in the 2020 decade, you have to do it right now when you listen, because we're going to close it forever if you don't. So if you go to ngppodcast.com, you can click join us in Discord and you'll make sure you get in there before we shut it down.
That's not true, but I do like the hard sell. We'll never shut down our open arms to have you join us as part of our Patreon community. We'd love for you to become a patron and support what we do here on the show. Just like our producer level supporters, Antonin, Dear Baby, Ben, Corey, Maxima, Zach Zion, and our wonderful director Garlisle do on a consistent basis, as well as three new patrons who have joined just this week to help support New Game Plus: Justin, Mike of Michigan, and Starshine. We are so appreciative of you guys jumping on board and consider it an early Christmas gift to us, at least as we're recording. I know you'll listen to this after, but thanks so much, guys. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're ending the year strong and in the right way with New Game Plus. And that puts us the closest we've ever been to Dungeons & Dragons, so I appreciate it.
Just throwing that out there.
You can find us on our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Links are in the description. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend, Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Abe's World or Oddworld. It's not Abe's World. It's Oddworld: Abe's Odyssey.
There we go.
Until then.
Oh my gosh.
I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
Conrad B. Anthony.
And this has been New Game Plus.